evening and welcome to Two-Thirds of the Raucous Caucus. Terry D. Kester, the doctor of democracies, off one more week on vacation. But tonight I have with me Mr.
Mark Levine.
And a special guest. We've got the co-founder of Campaign for Middle East Peace, co-founder of Progressive Democrats of America, Mr.
Newt Gingrich.
No, I don't think he's here tonight.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
Joel Siegel.
All righty. Well, now we're getting somewhere. Well, as you probably know, our friend Mr. Bibi Netanyahu will soon be coming to the United States to talk about Middle East peace. And for a while, that subject is going to be discussed. And we are certainly crossing our fingers, hoping for the best. Everybody wants peace. So what we're going to do tonight is pretty much resolve all the issues. So all we'll have to do is give him, I'm thinking we give him a CD of this show.
And immediately there'll be peace in the
Middle East. He won't even have to listen to the CD, in fact. Just carry it around, and just the positive energy emanating from the CD is going to just fix everything. What do you think?
The spirit of John Lennon lives.
There you go. There you go.
All we are saying is give peace a chance.
There you go.
That's all you have to do.
So let's talk about
Hold hands, sing kumbaya, and boom, it's magically solved.
It worked for me. So what we're going to talk about here is we're going to do things a little bit differently. As you probably know, the discussion so often when it comes to Middle East peace goes backwards. People basically say the way forward is to look backwards, and we don't believe that. The way forward is to look forward. People have lots of things that have happened. Terrible things have happened. People have been injured and died, and horrible things have happened, and we acknowledge that. But in order to move forward, what we really need to do is determine what, simply this, what needs to happen to create an environment for peace. We're going to start with Mark. Mark, I think the show will be about 5 minutes long because you're going to tell us that and we'll just have silence for 55 minutes.
Yeah.
What needs to happen, Mark?
I wish it were that easy. I think you got to look at it. There's so many different fronts, so many different areas, so many different things to be concerned about. I think the situation in Gaza is different from the situation in the West Bank. I think Iran is a concern. I think Lebanon is a concern. And the question is, how do you help people have their rights and at the same time protect people from being killed, protect people's security? I don't know that I can answer the question in five minutes. I'll just give a short answer is, I think it's very important to understand the situation in Gaza and the West Bank very differently. In Gaza, you have a dictatorship that's struggling very hard to destroy the state of Israel and is sending missiles on a regular basis and is frankly mistreating its own people miserably. And you have, a very, very dangerous place for anyone, for Arabs, for Jews, for anyone living there or close to there. In the West Bank, I think it should be noted there's been some progress, some real progress on the ground. There hasn't been a suicide bomber from the West Bank in at least a year, I think probably longer. Israel has reduced the number of checkpoints from 34 to 12. The economy is booming. The West Bank really offers a chance, a real chance, I think, to give peace a chance and to be the beginning of a new Palestinian Arab state. I don't have that same hope for Gaza, at least not while Hamas is in charge.
Okay, Joel. I know you're going to tell us exactly what, but, you know, you got to give Mark credit. It was kind of a sunny outlook there and to some extent.
Joel, let's start with the good news before I get to the bad news.
What do we need to do, Joel? How do we fix this problem? And let me just add this. I forgot to tell our listeners. We're here at 1211 U Street. We're at Ben's Next Door, which is right next to Ben's Chili Bowl. If you want to come here, if you want to weigh in, if you want to enjoy our show, we're here. They've got great food and drinks, a lot of good people. There's plenty of time to get here. We're on U Street right next to Ben's Chili Bowl. Come on down and join us. Also, we have a great live audience, and we're going to ask them to weigh in at any time. We want you to come up. We've got a microphone here, and we want you to weigh in.
And if you come down, you can weigh in, too. So if you're driving around and you got a burning question, just stop by Ben's Next Door and come ask us that question.
Joel, what do we need to do? Where do we go to get peace in Palestine and Israel?
First, I want to say you both are impressive because you're both intellectuals, but you're really good at radio. And I'm glad that you're going.
Compliments will get you everywhere, Joel.
You're good, man.
I like this guy, Mark.
I've seen you on Fox News defending progressive democratic values.
I may be the only one there doing that, but I'm doing my best.
So on behalf of all progressive Democrats, we thank you.
Thank you, Joel.
Mark, you and I have two things in common, besides the fact that we're both, you know, men and progressive Democrats.
I hope we have more than two things in common. go ahead.
We're both Jewish.
That's true.
And we're both Southern Jews. You're Memphis, correct?
Nashville, Tennessee.
Nashville, my bad.
And where are you from?
Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay, these are real southern places, by the way, unlike South Florida. Sorry, South Floridians.
I bet that you probably grew up in the Jewish community.
I did.
Probably went to temple.
Synagogue.
Synagogue.
Yeah, we were conservative Jews, ironically, since I'm a big liberal, but that has a whole different meaning in the Jewish faith.
Okay. You probably went to Hebrew school.
I did.
You probably ate around the breakfast table lox and bagel, and maybe even bacon, since you're Southern.
Actually, only my father ate bacon, and my grandfather kept kosher, so they didn't agree on that the last time.
But can we both agree that as American progressive Jews, that we agree with the majority of the world that there should be peace in the Middle East, that this 80-year conflict has got to end, that the occupation of the Palestinian people has to end, because this is a tragedy of people who are in Israel and people who are Palestinian, and what we have in common is that we're brothers and sisters. We're actually cousins. Jewish people and Palestinians genetically are cousins. But I think the first thing we need to do is the civil society, that's ordinary citizens who are there and here, have to come together and help those who are involved in the peace movement in Israel and Palestine. It's a thriving peace movement there, but they have a hard time getting money. They have a hard time raising their voice. But we have to agree that we want to resolve the conflict. That's one. Number two, we have this president named Barack Hussein Obama, who's very popular in the Middle East, and maybe not for Republicans or Glenn Beck, but for the rest of us. He's a remarkable man. He needs the political space to bring the parties together like he's going to do Wednesday, but he has to get more support from the American people, especially our community, especially the Jewish community, so he can do what he has to do to get a peace agreement that's actually signed. And I'll close by saying that the Arab Peace Initiative, the Geneva Accord, the Clinton parameters, there's been agreement after agreement after agreement, but we have to ask ourselves, why isn't there a permanent peace agreement? And Afif Safia, who's the former ambassador to the Palestinian Authority, the PLO, here, he says that unless...
They're now called the PA.
Correct.
The PLO was an old terrorist organization that has modified itself and declared itself that it believes in a peaceful solution to the conflict.
Actually, the Palestinian Authority is the government there in Palestine. The PLO is
Fatah.
The international...
We'll call it Fatah.
You got it.
All right.
But he was a mentor to me, and the point that he's made in his speeches and his talks around the world is there has to be a third-party intermediary civil society movement that makes sure that three things happen. One is that the parties to the conflict, Israelis and Palestinians, come to the peace table. Two, they actually sign an agreement. And three, it's permanent, it's long-lasting, and it works. And that hasn't happened yet, but it is very important that the American Jewish community, Muslims, Arabs, Christians, we all come together and see that this peace process is successful. And that's what our organization that I'm involved in is doing. That's the Campaign for Middle East Peace. We have many of our people here today. They're doctors, they're business people, Palestinians, Arabs, Jews, Christians. We're growing and growing, but we have to come together as a civil society to make it work. Otherwise, it's not going to be a success, I don't think.
Mark, he brings up a good point, and that is that it's critical that there's an intermediary. You know, of course, the United States is going to be it. It's critical that we make moves to make this happen. I mean, it's critical. What we do is very important in this peace process. In your opinion, what do you think the United States can do to help?
See, I guess I have a problem with the notion it's critical there be an intermediary. If you look at most of the resolutions that have moved the process forward, uniquely forward, they've really been when Israelis and Palestinian Arabs have worked together. The two biggest examples I can think of are at Madrid and at Oslo. And both of those, interestingly enough, had no intermediary whatsoever. The thing that got the PLO to forswear the use of violence, become the Palestinian Authority, run the West Bank, there were no intermediaries involved. The Oslo Accord, none of the. So again, I'm not against intermediaries. Right. I hope Barack Obama could do a good job. But I think at the end of the day, there will not be peace until ordinary Israelis and ordinary Palestinian Arabs think that peace is better for them than perpetual war. And I'm afraid that I know that Israeli Jews. Here's how I would describe the Israeli population, all right? And I think it pretty much holds throughout Israeli history. And it is a democracy. I would say one-third don't really want to give back any territories, want to keep them all, really don't want a two-state solution. I would say one-third of Israelis absolutely do, will give up anything, even parts of Jerusalem, to have that solution. And then the one-third in the middle, the moment they really believe they'll get peace, boom, they'll agree, and you'll have two-thirds of Israel vote for a democratically elected leader and make a resolution. Netanyahu, in my view, is not so much a cause of the problem as a result of attitudes in Israel. And I actually think the peace movement, I'm sorry, Joel, is very weak in Israel today. Unlike 2000, 10 years ago, the peace movement was very strong. Bill Clinton had the Accords of Camp David and Taba. And the only time in my life I was actually hopeful we were going to get to a solution was 2000. I'm afraid I'm not so hopeful now. And I think it's because of what happened after that. I don't want to go too much in the past because you told me to avoid the past, so I'm looking at the future. But the point is I think for both Israelis and for Palestinians, they have to believe peace will work because each side wants peace on their own terms. Peace is a wonderful thing to say. But then you got to say, well, where should the lines be drawn? You know, where should this go? Where should that go? Most people don't want violence, Jews or Arab, no question about it. But then you get down to the nitty-gritty details. I actually think 90% of the agreement is pretty much there. But it's the 10% that's causing all the difficulties.
First of all, you are one very well-informed lawyer.
Thank you.
It's an honor to be on the radio.
Okay, I can't take all these compliments, Joe. Right. My head's about to explode. I appreciate it.
Because when I talk to my
family
members...
Don't blow his head up, Joel. We got to contend with this guy every Tuesday night.
This is pretty cool because when I talk to my family members, since I'm 20 years old, I've been for a Palestinian state, and over lox and bagels and bacon, we would yell and scream at each other, and this kind of discussion is important because there's a word I'll underline. It's called rational. Right, and a lot of times in the American Jewish community, we do not have a rational discussion about this. It's irrational. It's too angry. But I appreciate this.
I would argue there's rational and irrational on both sides.
I'm with you.
And it would be great if the rational on both sides would get together. Absolutely.
Well, we're doing this now. Just one academic kind of perspective on Oslo. Actually, the Oslo process was exactly started by intermediaries, and let me tell you who they were. They were Israeli.
Oh, in Norway, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There were actually Israeli.
It wasn't America, though. That was the thing I guess I wanted to say. You're right.
It was there were Israeli academics, Palestinian academics, and Scandinavian academics.
That's right. There was Scandinavian involvement.
So
that's fair.
What that shows us is the importance of third party intermediaries. But
I'm not against them per se, but what I'm saying is the third party can't make the solution. They can suggest a solution, they can propose a solution, they can help the parties see each other's sides. But at the end of the day, unless the two peoples accept it, there's nothing the third party can do.
You and I, we're okay with that, except I really believe that you have to have a civil society movement, whether it was making sure that the anti-apartheid movement was an example. I was one of the leaders of that as a law student at UNC Chapel Hill. But if it wasn't for our civil society anti-apartheid movement and Randall Robinson, the African National Congress, working with the ANC, I don't know if South Africa would be African majority rule. But here's the larger point. I think the Arab Peace Initiative and the Geneva Accord offer the best framework for peace. And it's a real simple idea. It was conceived by King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia. It was 202 is when it was actually promulgated. It was reaffirmed by the Arab League in 2007. It's a real simple idea. Two states, Israel, Palestine, East Jerusalem as a capital. Israel has to withdraw from 67 borders, which there would be a state in Gaza, West Bank. Golan Heights would go back to Syria.
So Israel would have to give up its holiest site, the Western Wall, and Jews wouldn't be allowed to pray there?
Excellent question. Under the Geneva Accord, because we're talking about a framework, under the Geneva Accord, the Wailing Wall remains Israel's. That's an excellent point that you're making.
How do you split the old city? It's a very small place. You and I have both been there. I'm sure it's a square mile, and it's not easily splittable. There's walls all around it.
Now we're getting to the nitty-gritty, my friend.
It matters.
It is the good news.
Every inch has been fought over.
Oh,
in this.
I told you we're going to resolve this thing. Netanyahu need
all right.
Only listen
all
to
right,
this.
All right, we'll draw on
Joe.
Here.
No, it's getting hot in the kitchen. I like this. The beautiful thing about the Geneva Accord is when progressive and thoughtful and intelligent Israelis and Palestinian negotiators came together to come up with the Geneva Accord, they actually agreed on security arrangements in Jerusalem. They agreed on sharing of different sites. And here's the reason why, is they were progressive. In my opinion, Netanyahu, who will be here, in my opinion, is not a progressive. And I don't think at this point he's a Yitzhak Rabin, and he has to make a decision. Does he want to go down in history as a Rabin or a Sadat, or does he just want to be another leader who just who doesn't make peace. But I think if you look at who supports the idea of two states and frameworks like the Arab Peace Initiative.
Well, and Netanyahu, to be fair, has said he supports a two-state solution. He's on the right wing of Israeli politics. So the question to me is not whether or not to have a two-state solution. I think the middle of Israel, even to the right of the middle of Israel, is there. The question is, where do you draw the lines? But, and that's where everyone's going to fight over these very important issues.
Okay,
Jewish
but
religious
let me sites. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
My Jewish brother. Why not have a capital in East Jerusalem? Jerusalem is the third holiest site. There's Medina and Mecca. East Jerusalem is the third holiest site. It was never part of the 48 design of partition. If you remember the United Nations, there was a partition of Palestine into Israel and a Palestinian state. East Jerusalem was never part of that partition. In 1967, it was annexed.
After Jordan attacked Israel, right?
I'm with you. Now, here's the question that I ask. Look what Israel would gain if they agree to two states. East Jerusalem is a capital. East Jerusalem is already Arab. It's Palestinian. They always
Depends where you go.
Okay. But the question is not what Israel's going to lose.
Certainly the old
city. Here's
what
Israel gains. It gains peace with 22 Arab countries. It gains peace with the entire Muslim world. There could be trade and commerce with the Palestinian state. We can start working on global warming issues. Here's my question to you. Why not the Arab Peace Initiative? Thomas Friedman, New York Times, not a so-called left liberal Jewish intellectual. He's for it.
He hasn't endorsed the initiative. He says it's a basis for discussion.
Okay.
He has not endorsed the initiative. And look, you can talk about where to draw the lines. You've drawn them in a maximum possible way for the Palestinian area.
They drew them.
They drew them.
The actual negotiators.
But look.
I was drinking apple juice.
I understand. I understand.
At my school.
I guess I look at it this way. Jerusalem is the holiest city in Judaism. Now, Rome has Jews in it. Rome has Muslims in it. It's the holiest city of Catholicism. Muslims and Jews can freely practice their religion in Rome, but they don't own a piece of it. In Mecca, Jews used to be there. They were all kicked out, along with all the Christians. That's a pure Muslim city. In Paris, the French have control. I mean, English, Americans can live there, but the French have control. It is the third holiest Muslim site and has been since the time of the Crusades, I think, is when that was established. Frankly, the Muslims didn't seem to really care as much about it until the Christians conquered. We can go way back in history. But at the end of the day, I look at a country like India. India has the third largest Muslim population in the world, more than 100 million Muslims. It's a majority Hindu nation. It's a democracy. The Muslims can practice their religion freely there. And those that didn't want to live there ended up moving to Pakistan. And those Hindus that want to live in Pakistan ended up moving to India. I don't support forced population transfers. I'll be very clear about that. But I'm a minority in America, in a majority Christian country. You are too. It seems to me that the Palestinians, Arabs, have never, ever, ever, ever had a state in human history. There's never been an Arab state called Palestine. If they're going to get one, for the first time, including, by the way, the second holiest Jewish site, which is Hebron, right?
Okay.
If the Jews have to lose their second holiest site, why can't the Muslims lose their third holiest site? When I say lose, I don't mean kick out. I don't mean no freedom of religion. I mean understand that the holiest Jewish city that was a Jewish city 3,000 years ago, long before Islam existed, that one place, because you know, Joel, in 1948, there were Jews living in Jerusalem in the old city from 3,000 years ago all the way up till 1948 when the Jordanian army came in, wiped them all out, paved over the old city, destroyed all the buildings, and used old cemeteries for army latrines, right? And Israel had to... So Jerusalem's a very special case for Jews.
However,
there's a concept.
It's called... I learned it in the fourth grade in a sandbox with my two neighbors. We were fighting about who was going to get the most sand in the sandbox. And we came up with this wild idea. It's called sharing.
Well, there has to
be a sharing because...
Why share Jerusalem? Why not give Nazareth and Ramallah?
Let me make a comment here, though. Yeah. And here's what I hear from Joel, and I think this is important. The bottom line is this. You kind of weigh things and you say, okay, this is something that I may not want to give up. But here's the other thing that Joel's saying that I think you have to look at. It's very important. What are you going to get in return?
Peace.
Right. So if you say...
that's the other thing the Israelis don't believe.
If you say, I'm not going to, I don't want to give this up, and it's a jewel, but if I give this up, I can get a whole heck of a lot more. Is it more important to keep this this one thing, which may be important. Don't get me wrong. I'm not belittling the importance of these sites. I'm simply saying when you weigh it out now, if you say, okay, we're negotiating with someone, and someone says, if you give me this, I'll give you this, okay? And then you say, well, I don't believe it. Well, that's a whole other story, because then what you're saying is no one's negotiating in good faith, and why are you sitting at a negotiating table in the first place if anyone on either side at any given time, for instance, the Palestinian negotiators could very well say when the Jewish leaders say, well, we'll give you this, we don't believe you. So you have to either go on good faith or you're wasting your time. Now, but what I'd like to do here is we have a gentleman that is running an organization called, what is it, Yes? I'd like to find out about that. I'd like to hear about it if you would have time. If you'd be able to come up to the microphone and tell us about the organization. Yes.
I guess he's coming up.
Well, let
me respond to what you said waiting for him to come up. Because I guess here's my thing. When Israel is asked to give land for peace, it's asked to give something tangible for something intangible. You know if Israel's giving up land. In fact, Israel's given up land. Let's see, in 1956, gave up the Sinai. They gave up the Sinai a second time. They gave up Gaza. They gave up the portions of Lebanon. Every time it gives up something tangible, the sad truth is every single time Israel's given up land, the land has become controlled by violent people out to destroy Israel. It's true of Gaza, which is now Hamasistan. It's true of Lebanon, the poor Lebanese people, which is now controlled by Hezbollah to the real disadvantage of Lebanese people. And so I think an Israeli that says, hey, we don't want to give up this land and have it controlled by people trying to kill us, something tangible for something intangible, we're not going to get peace. All we do is give up and get in trouble.
Let me respond.
Yeah.
Now, I speak for, I would say, millions.
Although I do think Abbas is much better than anybody else. I want to be clear.
Abbas
on that.
Is the man, actually.
Yeah, no, I agree.
He's a great partner in peace. I say this, and I think I say this from my heart, and I think I represent millions of Jews in this country who are progressive and in Israel, that with the founding of Israel, there was a tragedy that evolved from that. And the Palestinians call it the Nakba, the great catastrophe, where they literally lost their country. They lost their identity. They have suffered so much in the occupation.
Lost their country. You mean left their homes?
Yes.
Okay. Because they didn't own the country. Britain owned the country.
But, well, right. you're a lawyer, right?
I am.
Okay, we both have law degrees, right?
That's true.
If you remember from my class, it was ocean coastal law. Under British common law, land is what's called the public trust, which really means it's the creator's. So I just want to make that clear that when we start claiming territory and who's
right.
in charge, it's really God's land. But anyway, and he's sort of renting it out, you know, subletting it to us.
That's the Native American principle, which I support, but
okay.
Unfortunately most of the world has not.
Now, here's the point I want to make. No matter what negotiation there has been over the years and years and years of negotiations between Israelis and Palestinians, East Jerusalem always comes up.
Yeah, it does. It's usually the thing that the straw that breaks the camel's back, unfortunately.
All right. You went to law school, I went to law school. There's this thing, it's called conflict resolution. Land for peace. Compromise. It worked when we signed the peace agreement with Jordan. It worked when Israel signed a peace... I'm sorry, not we. When Israel signed the peace agreement with Egypt. It's a formula that worked. It worked in Northern Ireland. There was land swap and neighborhood swaps between the Protestants.
But it didn't work in Lebanon. It didn't work in Gaza.
Hold
Why
on.
Not?
Hold on. Because there still hasn't been the will yet, in my opinion, from the Israeli side, that to really understand the pain and suffering of the Palestinians to the point where they understand their narrative to go, you know what? We've all been through hell. We've been through hell. Our children have been... How many more wars? How many deaths? Let's sit down at the table. What do you want? What means something to your people? Okay, is it East Jerusalem? Let's sit down and figure this out because it's not a real big area. And then there's this thing called the Geneva Accord. Israel needs a new security architecture. You can put UN troops and NATO troops and AWACS.
I'm not finished.
I'm sorry.
All right, go ahead.
It is, you know, when Israel's, and we have Israelis on our board, great on our organization's board, and they're addicted to the occupation because of the fear they have from attack, which is legitimate and which is something that, of course, you know, any person who believes in Gandhi and the ideas of nonviolence from King. Certainly our organization rejects terrorism, rejects armed struggle. It doesn't get you anywhere. Nevertheless, you can't occupy an entire people to make you feel safe.
But,
and there's another way to do it.
But you see where we're different here.
You can't do that.
I agree with you.
Okay.
But I just want to be clear.
Put troops on the borders, man.
But see,
NATO and U.S.
The
troops.
The issue of...
Leave from Iraq, put them in Palestine. I support that, and I'm a liberal.
The issue of ending occupation and the issue of East Jerusalem are very different issues, right?
Okay.
You can leave... right now, in fact, more than 90% of the Palestinians, I think it's like 98%, are ruled by their own governments. I mean, some are ruled very badly in Gaza. Some are ruled relatively well, frankly, for their past experience, by Abbas. So what we're talking about is not, like I said, even Netanyahu is willing to support a two-state solution. It's not that Israel shouldn't end occupation. The question is, where do you draw the line? And for UN troops, as you know, I'm sure you know up in Lebanon...
NATO.
NATO would be better.
NATO,
well,
UN,
the United Nations,
U.S. troops.
Even look at Lebanon, right? So here, Lebanon rains so many missiles on Israel that the entire third half, imagine if a third of the United States had to evacuate. One third of the Israeli population had to evacuate. The missiles were that bad, coming from Hezbollah, the Iran-backed.
Well, remember, Mark,
Lebanon,
the issue is, where do we go forward?
My point is this.
The things that
happened. After that happened, Israel was promised. NATO, Italian troops, European troops would come in. There was a UN resolution that Hezbollah would be disarmed. And on that basis, on that promise, Israel left Lebanon. It never happened.
The New York Times just did an article about this. And I think the New
Israel
York Times
trust
is trustworthy.
It.
Very simple. There are UN troops all over Lebanon, and Hezbollah literally cannot move an inch. They can't move an inch. They're in check. Why is that? Well, there's 40,000 troops. I think they're either NATO or UN troops in Kosovo. I mean, I'm a dove and I'm a peace guy, but I also believe in 38th parallel between North and South Korea.
The Why haven't they followed the UN resolution and disarmed Hezbollah? That would make a huge difference.
Why
the United Nations, which the Security Council of the world said, we are going to disarm Hezbollah. If they were to follow that own resolution that was passed just 4 years ago, that would make an immense difference in Israeli trust.
On the same token, we can argue, why hasn't Israel... And we're our organization, pro-Israel, we're pro-Palestine, we're pro-U.S., we're pro-peace. I could say, well, how come Israel hasn't followed Resolution 242 and 338 and left, you know, the occupied territories, which is against the Geneva Convention? Here's the larger issue. The Arab peace proposal, which is supported by United Nations, the European Union, progressive American Jews, the former president of the American Jewish Congress... I mean,
okay. What's your solution, brother?
Wait a minute,
Mark? I'll give it to you.
What's your solution?
We're out of time.
I'm laying out a solution. I want to hear yours.
I'll be happy to tell you, Mark.
We're going to do it the second half. We're out of time. You're listening to 89.3 FM WPFW, the Raucous Caucus. I'm Garland Nixon here with Mark Levine, Joel Siegel. We're going to come back in a few minutes, and we want to get our audience involved. We're right here at Ben's Next Door. Good evening, and welcome back. My name's Garland Nixon. You're listening to 2/3 of the Raucous Caucus. Mark Levine. I can't never remember this guy's name. Mark something or other. Mark Levine, Garland Nixon, and here with co-host Joel Siegel. Terry D. Kester will be back next week.
Absolutely.
We're talking Middle East peace. We want to get our audience involved. We got lots to talk about. We've got Anthony here, and next we'd like to. We've got Dr. Anesh, who is a brilliant representative of the Muslim community, and
And I promise at some point I'm going to give Joel Siegel my solution, but we can wait till our audience asks some questions.
All right.
I want to hear it.
We'll start with Anthony, then Dr. Anesh, and then hopefully we'll have someone else back there that'll be willing to come in. Let's hear it.
Thank you. I appreciate this conversation today. First of all, you know, to the whole question of the two-state solution, you know, there are actually three states involved. And the United States happens to be the third with their military and financial might, the way we, you know, fund and arm Israel. And we basically can't be an honest broker, so the United States should have absolutely nothing to do with this process whatsoever. This is the whole purpose of having international organizations like the United Nations. You need someone that is somewhat has the possibility of being a real honest broker. The United States is, you know, it's impossible for us to be that. Secondly, I think that if we remove the technicalities and we stop talking about law and stuff like that, and we talk about fairness, we talk about basic concepts, elemental concepts about what is fair, what is right, what is just, we'll move this conversation a lot further than, you know, we sniping at each other about who did what when, particularly since the conversation is never balanced. We unfortunately have adopted this narrative in the United States that the Israelis are just kind of laying in their bed while these evil Palestinians are throwing, you know, katushas and whatnot in their general direction. And not only is that inaccurate, it's irrelevant, and it doesn't really help us have a conversation about solutions. Ultimately, collective punishment is wrong. Fix that. Occupation is wrong. Fix that. I mean, you know, we can have a real conversation about what sort of lives human beings should be able to live, what sort of potential countries should be able to have. Should people be able to have electricity and water, be governed by the, you know, the government of their choices? Things like that. We need to have a conversation on a very human level and then explode that conversation to the larger political issues. And it may be possibly also when we remove the, you know, the big bad wolf in the room, which is the United States, we might be able to actually move forward on this issue.
Thank you. Let me make a quick comment. This is what I love about WPFW. We just have the most brilliant listeners. We have the listeners that we have, the comments that we get from the people who listen to. And Mark, and, you know that from when we get called in the studio, the comments that we get from our
listeners. And Anthony's a regular, and he always gets us thinking on any issue.
That's right. He's a sharp guy. Well, let's get Dr. Onesh in here because he's a representative.
Just very briefly before my colleague here, he's the chief of general surgery at Fairfax Hospital and one of the most important Muslim leaders in progressive Muslim, not just in Northern Virginia, but in the nation, if not the world. The reason why, just first of all, excellent comment. Here's the challenge, though. Every president of and every prime minister of every Arab country has said the United States has to lead. They got to lead a Middle East peace initiative. They just do. And one reason is because we do give that $3 billion to Israel.
The U.S. is the only one that can bring Israel to the table.
So we can have a historical and extraordinary impact.
The reason why Israel doesn't trust the United Nations is legion. I mean, look at the fact that, you know, there have been, I don't know how many hundreds of resolutions about Israel, and there's Sudanese genocide, and virtually nothing happens there. The UN is seen in Israel, and I think you can prove it objectively,
but
incredibly
the point,
biased against Israel.
But I wanted to agree with you on something, is I think you're right, that you have to have the European Union, you need to have the Saudis involved, you got to have the Arab League, you need civil society, intermediate organizations, because I agree that the United States has been overly biased during the negotiations between Israelis and Palestinians, but I think you have to have the United States leadership, and I think President Obama is that person to do it, but combined with other countries of the world to make sure that it's, I won't say fair and balanced because that's Fox, but so that it's fair.
Mark, and incidentally, Mark's the one that, he's the fair and balanced part of Fox News, I might add. Briefly, and then let's get to Dr. O'Neill.
Thank you, Mark.
Just to respond, I mean, you know, the enemy of the good is always the, I'm sorry, I totally screwed up that, the perfect, thank you.
The perfect
is the enemy of the good. I mean, United Nations, anyone can criticize United Nations because certain countries are on it, blah, 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 blah. The whole issue here is really that, you know, Israel isn't really willing to be accountable to an organization that doesn't have its obvious interest in mind. Now, the point that I'm making about the United States is not only can they not be an honest broker, they should not be involved in the process at all. They should not be, they should not be funding, continuing to fund Israel in this way, because you can't possibly do that. You can't basically have, you know, a ghetto state, you know, financially, the Palestinians versus this Goliath, and expect them to compete equally on the same playing field.
Thank you. The good thing about this show is we're getting a lot of different, we may not agree with everything, but we're getting a lot of different points of view. And this is what we need, and we need it in a civil fashion, such as we're getting an academic fashion. And speaking of brilliant people in academics, Dr. Onesh.
Thank you very much. I'd like to commend the host of the show and all the listeners and the co-host as well for this wonderful discussion. What I want to weigh into is knowing the important role that the U.S. can play in these negotiations. I think one of the missing aspects to this, to making this input robust and one that trickles to policy making and to making sure that we have an influential role in trying to bridge the gap between the two parties, is the role of civic society, as Joel mentioned earlier. And one of those missing gaps, and as a Muslim American who've lived here for close to 30 years and who's been involved in interfaith with its different aspects, I find a gaping hole in the robust relations between the Jewish and the Muslim community. And I think it starts here. We need to bring in a sound of reason. We are thousands of miles away from the conflict. We see it from a perspective that allows us to be able to look at the justice issue, look at the peace issue, look at the security, the obliteration of terrorism, and all of the issues that must be present to the discussion that our brothers in the Holy Land must have, both parties. And unless we begin with doing that here, I find myself not pessimistic, but really looking at a situation that is only made difficult because we lack this tool. So I, for one, find this very important. I think we should expand it. We should have a reasoned, rational dialogue about what does Jerusalem mean for my Jewish friends, and that helps me understand that vis-a-vis my connection to Jerusalem as a Muslim and as a practicing Muslim. And so once I do this, I'm at least cutting across the superficial problems or boundaries that we have, and we're cutting across our humanity. We're able to connect. We're able to forge a more sound and reason, and I think that will reflect very strongly on our people in the Holy Land, and hopefully it will bring forth the ability to muster better policy and move us forward in the Middle East.
Doctor, I love your comment. I have to tell you something about my hometown of Nashville, Tennessee. One thing that my hometown synagogue does, along with my hometown mosque, is they constantly do programs together. The Jews have prayed in the mosque. The Muslims have prayed in the synagogue. They had discussions. They've even had discussions on Israel, believe it or not. And sometimes they get a little heated, but because they're friends and they do things together, and because they like each other, they can actually get past a very, very difficult wound for both communities. I completely agree with you, and I'm proud of the fact, as a Jew, that our Jewish mayor of New York, for example, was so proudly supportive of the right of the Muslims in Lower Manhattan to build the Islamic Cultural Center. And while some Jews were not as good as they could have been, at least the mayor of New York set a very clear standard in that regard. And I think any time a Jewish group condemns prejudice against Muslims, anytime Muslims condemn prejudice against Jews or attacks on either people, it helps everybody. So totally apart from the nitty-gritty of where we draw the lines, which I think is a very difficult question, and unlike Garland, I don't think we're going to solve tonight, this issue, I think, is what makes for peace. And actually, I think that as the West Bank is getting to improve, I would love to see a lot more social ties between Israelis and Palestinians, as much as possible. Frankly, some of them used to exist more a few decades ago. I'd like to see those grow, because as soon as people understand that they like each other, they're less likely to try to kill each other. And I love what you said.
No.
I'm going to do something that's very hard for people in the American Jewish community. I'm going to be really honest on this issue. What I see in the Jewish community are two very important things. Number one, there are too many people in the American Jewish community who are working against peace. And I know it, and there are other Jewish people who are nodding their heads. Somehow, something happened in the American... Hold on.
That's how you define peace. That's the problem.
I will, in a second. Arab Peace Initiative, Clinton parameters, I've kind of defined it. Is we went from being an American Jewish community and an Israel that couldn't wait for the day for peace. We could have only dreamt of having someone in the Palestinian Authority like an Abbas in an Arab League that in 202 says, hey, we're going to end all hostilities. We're going to recognize Israel's right to exist. What are we waiting for, Mark? What is the organized American Jewish community waiting for? We got to ride this horse, baby. We got to sign a peace agreement now. And it's almost embarrassing. You know, we are a people of the book. We're scholarly. You know, we're humanitarian. We've gone through thousands of years of pogroms, Holocaust. I lost half of my family in the Holocaust. The Palestinians have suffered enough. We've all suffered enough. Sign a peace agreement based on something close to the framework of the Palestinian, I'm sorry, of the Arab peace plan. But I know for a fact there's too many hardline American Jews and now Christian Zionists. Can you tell me why our own community is working against our own interests, which is a safe and secure Israel and a safe and secure... What happened, Mark, to the progressive Jewish community? Yes, we got J Street. But I remember, and I'll close with this, I remember seeing the handshake on television as a kid.
Camp David, you're talking about Jimmy Carter, Begin and Sadat.
And I was just filled with so much, you know, joy. And even Arafat and Yitzhak Rabin, we got to get that spirit back. But what you and I need to be doing, and other American Jews, we're going to have to go to the temples and go to the organized groups, whether it's AIPAC or the American Jewish Congress, with our Palestinian friends, with our Dr. Ameshes, with our Palestinian brothers and sisters, with our African-American community, and say, let's open up a dialogue. Let's not be, this is not the Redskins and the Cowboys. This is not winners and losers. This is about world peace. And I'd like to, posit this. Why don't we start having more of these symposiums on WPFW? Let's bring in people with different views. Let's bring in people with similar views. But we're in the nation's capital and the world's capital. Look what we can do if we start getting organized.
I tell you, I'm all for symposia. I'm all for people talking together. I think it's hard to characterize any community, whether it's the American Jewish community, the American Muslim community, Jews, Israelis, Muslims, Arabs. We're all individuals. And there's a wide range of views on Israel in the Jewish community and the Christian community, frankly. Everyone from the Christian Zionists who want to expand Israel's borders. It all comes down to the nitty-gritty, as far as I'm concerned. It all comes down to where you draw the line. I firmly believe, though, we do need symposia. We do need to talk to each other. I don't think, though, that it's fair to say that where I want to draw the line, that's peace. And where you want to draw the line, that's not peace. Now, anyone that doesn't want to draw a line, anyone that says there should never be a Palestinian state, okay, all right, I'll say that's against peace. But if someone says draw the line here and someone says draw the line there, I'm not willing to say that both of them are against, that one's for peace and one's not.
It's not about
peace.
The lines. It's about justice. It's about fairness.
Well, let's talk about
it's
justice.
It's about
and fairness.
What's right. It's about what the Palestinian people need to feel like they have a state and a country and an identity that they've lost. It's what Israelis need to feel secure.
Right.
And I think if a progressive government comes in, let's say Shimon Peres.
But there was a progressive government. That's what scares Israelis. And in 2000, they shook hands and they said, here, Arafat, here's 95% of what you want. And Arafat said no deal and started the Intifada. And that made the left... Israel. They had the support, lost.
It's 2010. We got to start now.
Okay,
time is now.
What we're going to do is we're going to start now by going to our brother, Jay Winter Nightwolf.
Hey, Joel, how you doing?
We love you, buddy.
Mark, love
doing
you
good.
Too, man, all of you. And I'm happy that you got this discussion. But, you know, too many people at the table on this are stuck on historical dogma. They're stuck on political rightness. They've forgotten the humane part of it, the human family. The Palestinians today are the American Indians of the 1800s, occupied, controlled, marginalized, subjugated. You can't hate me forever. I can't hate you forever. So where does this stop? We need to talk to each other and look at each other when we talk to each other instead of talking away, looking down, and all of that kind of stuff. That's the problem. In this whole mix, humanity has lost its humanity. And I would love to see the Palestinian brothers and sisters and the Israeli brothers and sisters and all of those other folks that are involved in this to come together and unclench your fists. Unclench your fists. I can't talk to you if you got a fist in my face, okay? This is the first thing that we need to do. And whatever I can do, I'm here.
Great.
Do you think there should be a Native American state? I mean, after all, there's no one more justified than owning all of America, than the Native Americans. You folks were here first. The other 98% of us are interlopers. Should there be a separate Native American state where Native Americans can rule themselves?
Well, actually, there is, Mark.
Well, there are reservations, but they really don't have that much power.
But it hasn't worked out so well for them.
No.
It's not called reservations. It's called concentration camps.
Right. That's
places
my point.
That
it hasn't worked
very well.
People
were put to die.
Right.
Can't even grow vegetables out there or raise animals out there, you know? So, no. Let's not even go there. You don't want me to answer that question.
I do want you to answer that question.
No, that'll go in.
And that's not where we're going.
All right,
That's not what we're doing here. Let's do this, because something I want to find out. Joel, you're co-founder of an organization. You brought some of your people here today. It's called the Campaign for Middle East Peace. Tell me a little bit. I see we've got we've got our Muslim brothers. We've got our Jewish brothers here, all in the same organization. Tell me a bit about this organization and what it is you're trying to accomplish.
Well, what we're trying to accomplish is to organize the largest possible, never in the history of peacemaking, civil society, interfaith, multicultural, Middle East peace movement that will weigh in on the levers of power, that's President Obama, the Congress, the United Nations, the Arab League, so that we as ordinary citizens who are here in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area and around the United States, plus we have our sister organization in Israel, so we can weigh in this. It's called democracy, so there can be a peace agreement. It's permanent. There's peace in the Middle East. There's jobs in the West Bank and Gaza. We start working on global warming together. We are comprised of Palestinian business people. We got doctors. We got lawyers. We got teachers. We got students from high school and college. We have imams. We have rabbis. We're just ordinary citizens. The only problem we have is we eat too damn much.
I believe
meetings,
that.
At our meetings, the Jewish food and the Arab food, I've gained 10 pounds during Ramadan. I'm kidding. We're a very soulful group of people.
I bet the falafel is great. I'm just saying.
The food is good, but we're very serious, and Harriet Fulbright is the chair of our organization. Congressman Fonroy is the president. We're recruiting celebrities. We're recruiting all kinds of committed people who want peace. We want to do a Middle East peace holiday, one day a year where everyone celebrates Middle East peace by having food together.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
It's going down,
I love
my
that,
friend.
Because breaking bread in both Jewish and Arab traditions is very important.
We break too much bread, by the way, especially in the Jewish tradition. You know that, neither. We want to do a march
too.
For Middle East peace, and then flying kites, have children's flying kites on the mall. There's going to be national call-in days. There's going to be lobbying of Congress. There'll be visits to the White House. We're going to do what hadn't been done really in a long time, and that's a real old-fashioned grassroots, boots on the ground, coalition, interfaith, until it's done, because it's got to come from ordinary citizens, and that's what we're doing.
Great. We've got a couple board members here. Well said. We've got we want to hear from Ike Jafari.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you, Mr. Nixon, for inviting us to this wonderful show.
He's much better than the other Nixon, trust me. Much better.
But a lot poorer, I might add.
I'm not a crook.
Well, it's always nice to be an ordinary citizen. what I wanted to say is I just wanted to give an idea where I came from and what I represent.
Excellent.
I am an American Palestinian who was born and raised in the occupied territory.
Where?
I was born and raised in a refugee camp called Al-Amari camp, just outside Ramallah. And I cannot tell you enough how bad life is in those refugee camps, not counting under occupation. So as we are human beings and we feel with one another in this country, and you have a house, you live in peace and security, you have a job, you have access to health doctors and whatever you need. And we want to have the same things for our brothers and sisters back home. I'm not trying to be prejudiced when it comes to the Israelis and Palestinian question, but our brothers in Israel have everything, and our brothers in Israel and Palestine don't have that much. And that's what really energized me to join this wonderful organization, is to bring about peace between our people and equality based on human needs that God gave all of us the same equal amounts. And that's what I hope our efforts here in this country would bring peace about in our region back home.
You're not ordinary. You're an extraordinary
thank you.
Peace
beautifully,
activist.
Beautifully
extraordinary man.
Bruce.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'd like to compliment this gentleman here. He's the only one that's talked about humanity tonight. His comments are telling and poignant. I don't know which one of the three of you were talking about the big picture, but a major part of the big picture, which everybody seems to not pay a lot of attention to, is how can the Israelis, the governments of both the Israelis and the governments of the Palestinians, keep doing what they're doing, and they forget about the children. Because they're inflicting this. If they don't resolve this conflict, as you were saying, Joel, now is the time to resolve the conflict in the most fair and equitable way. They're going to condemn their children to a longer existence of violence, of occupation, of hatred. So now is the time for our president to assist in this peace process any way he can. He needs all of our strength and all of our help to give him that political ground that he needs to be able to accomplish this.
Let me suggest something that President Obama could do. Very specific, very easy, entirely symbolic. He doesn't have to give anything up, but would make a big difference. He needs to visit Israel. He's been to several Arab countries. He's been to Egypt. He gave a wonderful speech in Cairo. A lot of Israelis mistrust Barack Obama for no other reason than he hasn't gone to Jerusalem and broken bread with them. I think that tiny symbolic move would mean a lot to Israelis.
2 years ago was the last time my wife and I were in Israel. We were there in October and November when the elections were being held here. It was very, very telling to listen to my cousins who have been there for close to 100 years, to listen to their views and their perspectives on our politics. Most of them said, oh, we don't trust, you know, we don't know where Barack Obama is coming from. We're not sure. We don't know much about him. Their comments on Mr. McCain, you know, they felt more positive about him. Most American Israelis, dual citizenships, I think the majority of them were more pro McCain, Palin, until they realized that if anything happened, and this is my own personal feelings, that if anything ever happened to McCain, who was going to be left to run the country?
Into the ground.
That's a really scary thought. That's scarier than some of the things we've talked about.
She'd have the nuclear code.
Don't even. That hurts my brain.
But it put them in a quandary because they felt they were between a rock and a hard place. Some of my cousins I've talked to recently in Israel, and friends of mine who live there, American dual citizen Israelis. Many of my cousins I've lost cousins in most of the wars there.
As have I. Well, not most, but certainly some of them.
And one of the most telling comments was having them say, when I asked, I kept on prodding them and asking them for a question like, you know, well, what do you think about what's really going to happen? And their response was, they don't know where their leaders are taking them. They don't know who to talk to.
There's a huge pessimism, I think, among Israelis, Palestinians, Americans. I mean, I have to admit, even I share it. And I'm a fairly optimistic person. It's hard to see a way out when they agree on 90%, but they're going to keep fighting over that 10%.
Because the American Jewish community, Brother Mark, one of the main reasons why there's going to be a problem, let's be honest with each other. There are hardline Jewish organizations
and hardline Arab organizations.
Okay,
they both exist.
But now let's. Okay, that's true. But
I just don't want you just to say
sides. We condemn. Our organization condemns rocket attacks on sleeping children from Gaza and threats by the president of Iran against Israel.
Because we're
from the tradition of Gandhi and Martin Luther King. However, the American Jewish community has to wake up and support a two-state solution.
I think most do, Joel.
63% do, but okay, when it 63%. Comes to East Jerusalem being shared, or the settlers being repatriated back into Israel, they start fighting it, and you know what? They're wrong.
They're wrong
on that issue. We are losing an opportunity of a lifetime to make peace with a moderate Abbas and have peace in the world. And we need to discuss it and be honest with each other. The Jewish community also has to learn to love their Palestinian brothers
and
sisters.
I'll say this, Joel.
We've got Mike
okay.
here. We want to hear from our audience.
Go ahead.
As a member of the Jewish community, I share those elated feelings watching the handshake between Begin and Sadat and watching the handshake with Yasser Arafat, who I grew up hating as a killer, become working for peace. We're so close. We're so close. Land is land. Land can be shared. Shrines, we can have shared access. We can pray together. What I want to say to my fellow brothers and sisters who are Jewish, Dayenu, enough. Enough fighting. Enough war. It's time for peace.
Dayenu, brother.
Dayenu.
All right. Look, I've got to thank some people here. I've got to do the credits. First of all, we want to thank our engineer,
Drew
Franklin. And, of course, without Drew Franklin, let me show you what you'd hear. Absolute crickets chirping. Okay, next, we want to thank Ramon Grimaldi. He's the board operator back at WPFW,
hey,
doing a great job. Of course, the queen of quality, Gladys Brooks, our beautiful
Gladys!
Producer. She
Beloved.
Does a brilliant job of reining in these madmen I'm surrounded with. Okay, and last but not least, we want to thank our audience. Absolutely brilliant
Wonderful
comments today.
Audience tonight.
Brilliant comments today, and I love the unity. And also, we want to thank Ben's Next Door for hosting
and
us
Nizam
here.
Ali.
Nizam Ali. And, of course, Little Tariq. We want to thank them for making us guests here.
Can I thank Mark Levine for having a civil, rational discussion?
Can I thank Joel Siegel for the same thing?
Love you, man. Shalom. Shalom, brother.
All right.
Are we done?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we thought we were done.
Well,
we
got the team here.
Yeah, so it didn't work that way. We did all that a great out, and we were done.
Let me give my 10-second thing.
Okay.
I think at the end of the day, when both Israelis and Palestinians trust that a deal will be kept, when Israelis believe they will actually get peace for land, which they don't believe right now, believe that the wars will actually stop if they give land, they'll give land. And when the majority of Palestinians actually say, all right, we'll take this, maybe not everything we want, but most of what we want, when both sides compromise, we'll get an agreement.
Can Jay Winter Netwolf, the ambassador piece,
hold
more symposiums?
Well, unfortunately, we've got to close down here. Get in touch. You can get in touch with me at garlandin@gmail.com. MarkLevineRadio.com?
MarkLevineRadio.com, yes.
All right, we're out of here.